What's happening, people, and welcome to this week's episode of Football Fans Podcast with your boy JJB, Jordan Jarrett Bryan. This week on the show, we're going to run through quite a lot of topics. We're going to talk about Brendan Rodgers, and I want to hear from the guys here today whether they feel that he gets unfair press or whether he's probably at his level now that he's moved from Celtic to Leicester. We're also going to talk about what's happening in Spain with Real Madrid and Barcelona. We're also going to be discussing Juventus and whether they need to win the Champions League to not be the laughingstock of Europe, considering the outlay of money they've spent and the amount of years it's been since they have won a Champions League. And we're going to wrap up with a chat about management and managers being sacked and whether a lot of the managers are being fired due to unrealistic expectations. To do so on the pod this week, I'm joined by our Fulham fan here, Jack. What are you saying, Jack?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Can't complain too much.
You are?
Scotty's at the wheel. We're good.
Scotty's at the wheel. I hate that song.
I know that song.
If I hit one more time, literally, they sing it literally from minute one to minute 94.
I know. Like,
they can see the goal and they're still... It's annoying.
Good support.
It's
good
support. God, it's annoying not support. We also got Josh here, United fan. What are you saying?
Ole is at the wall, mate.
Nah.
I'm good. I'm good. I'm relaxed, nice and calm, enjoying football, just watching on the weekend. Maybe even watching Match of the Day again.
So how long was you on a Match of the Day hiatus? How long did you...
I didn't watch it until Jordi got sacked for about...
Oh, wow.
...this season.
Okay.
I usually just watch United games and then I just skip Match of the Day because I'm not interested. And plus Liverpool are top.
Yeah, fair play. Right, we're not going to do any drive-bys on the show this week. I've got so much I want to get through on the show. I'm going to try and squeeze in as much as possible. We're also going to talk about Sarri as well. We're going to try and squeeze in some Sarri talk as well because there's a lot of talk about him being stubborn. I'm not so sure I kind of buy into that stubborn talk. I think he's being himself, and you knew what you were getting when you were getting someone like him. So we'll try and get into him in a little bit. But let's start off, gentlemen, with... some talk about Real Madrid. Now, what's going on there, and Gareth Bale in particular, I want to have a chat about they're not doing very well in the league. They're still in the Champions League. They are playing this week, I believe. Their game tonight or tomorrow? They're in
tonight.
Tonight. Okay, so recording this pod, they have their second leg against Ajax. And I want to hear from you guys and find out, A, why you think Madrid are struggling so much domestically in La Liga. And secondly, we'll get to Gareth Bale because there's been a lot of talk from his agent in the last couple of days. The fans aren't really, really happy. And it feels like it might be coming to an end there. So I'll start with you, Jack. What's your theory as to why Madrid are struggling so badly this year?
Right. So there's something to be said here about Madrid in that they haven't been defensively capable for so long, like such a long time. A left side of Marcelo and Sergio Ramos is so weak defensively. Yes, they both have great attacking threat going forward. Yes, they're both sort of leaders, good characters, but ultimately neither of them can defend.
Mm-hmm.
And last year they papered over those cracks because Cristiano banked in 50 goals, and he's been doing that for so many seasons. So what's happened is they've taken away those goals and suddenly everyone's going, wow, they're bad defensively. I'm like, no, this isn't new. Like, they've been bad defensively for ages. They've just been able to deal with it by basically outscoring teams. And that team now, Solari sort of vaguely got them back in check for a little while. Everyone was like, oh, maybe this is the answer. We all knew that was going to come to an end when they came up against anyone of genuine kind of quality, and Barcelona put them to the sword twice in a week. They were very lucky to get a result at Ajax in the first leg of that Champions League tie. I think they might struggle tonight against Ajax, even at the Bernabeu. But, you know, there's so many things wrong. They need a centre forward. They need a centre midfielder because one of Modric and Kroos has to go because they are no longer the pairing that they once were. And they need an entire new back four almost. Maybe we give Carvajal and Varane the benefit of the doubt.
Well, let me come back to you. I'm going to bring in our regular Spanish football expert, Ben Hayward. Ben, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, Jordan. Thanks, and you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Now, I know you're covering... Are you doing the Real Madrid game tonight?
Yeah, I'm looking over the Bernabeu now as we speak.
Right, so I know you haven't got long, so I want to try and rattle through as many points with you while we've got you as possible.
Cool.
On the game tonight that you're doing, they've got a 2-1 lead. As Jack mentioned there, it was a 3-1, 3-2 lead. 3-2 lead, even.
2-1
lead, 2-1 league. It's 2-1. Yeah, I thought it was 2-1. Jack, you're messing me up here, Jack. You're messing me up. it was quite fortuitous in that first leg. A, do you expect them to progress tonight? And B, on a wider scale, looking at the domestically, do you, I don't know if you heard any of what Jack was saying earlier on, are a lot of their domestic problems down to the fact that Ronaldo was significantly papering over a lot of the defensive cracks?
Yeah, I think so. First of all, tonight, if I had to bet on it, I imagine that Real Madrid will get through this somehow. But they have lost their last three games here at the Bernabeu, so they could be a bit rocky. Obviously, two of those were Clásicos we saw in the last week. But they also lost here to Girona in La Liga before the two games against Barcelona. So, they're not in really good shape coming into this game. And you'd expect them to get through just because of their European pedigree. But, of course, Sergio Ramos got himself deliberately booked in the first leg, thinking that this one would probably be quite easy. He probably wishes he hadn't now because, defensively, right, 2-1, but if Real Madrid concede, confidence isn't high, obviously, then there's going to be a bit of shakiness, a bit of anxiety in the stadium. And we'll see. But, I expect that they'll get through. But I think there could be a bit of a scare tonight.
And on the team itself, do you feel that, it's a simple maths as you lose Ronaldo and it's just wide open in terms of exposing how defensively poor this team is?
Well, yes and no. I think obviously Ronaldo was a huge player here at Madrid. He scored 450 goals in 9 seasons. And I was looking at the Champions League stats in the last 3 seasons, obviously when they won every year. He scored 49 goals in the Champions League over 3 seasons. And that is incredible. It was in Europe where he really came into his own. And they're definitely going to miss his goals in games at this level. But domestically, they had the problems last season. They lost La Liga by about 17 points, I think it was, from Barcelona in the end. They came third. So it's not all Ronaldo. Now, as Jack was saying, there are other problems in the team as well. It's an ageing team. They need to strengthen in midfield. The defence hasn't been great. Even Courtois, who came in the summer, a lot of people saying Keylor Navas should still be playing. So I think there are problems to address, but definitely signing a goal scorer in the summer is going to be a big one. And Vinicius Junior, the young Brazilian, he's been very, very good. But I think he's scored something like 3 goals in 75 or more shots. He's very, very raw. And, he's been thrown in there and he's been their best player in recent weeks. But you can't be depending on an 18-year-old wonder kid if you're Real Madrid. It's not good enough. So, they need to address all of that in the summer for sure.
Let's talk Gareth Bale now. It's not looking good for him. One of my guests here, Josh, is a massive fan of Gareth Bale, and he thinks he's been done dirty. A, do you know if he's starting tonight? And secondly, do you think he will be at Real Madrid next season?
He's not starting tonight, Jordan, and that's not a surprise. He was booed here at the Bernabeu on Saturday when he was in the team against Barcelona, but did very, very little in that game to impress. And it was a chorus of boos as he went off. And he's scored a couple of goals lately, but not really done enough this season. And it's just a general feeling here as if it's all coming to an end for Gareth Bale. But of course, the problem is with Bale is that he's 29 going on 30. He's on really, really big wages. So, you're looking at, if you're a Premier League club, you're looking at a big transfer fee to sign Bale. He's injury prone and he's on massive, massive wages. So it's going to be a difficult one. Hard to see where he could end up next season, but it certainly looks like it's coming to an end at Real Madrid.
Do you think his time there will be remembered well, or do you just think that he's not lived up to the hype that was going around when he went there? Or do you think he's been harshly treated by the fans and sections of the press?
I think he's been harshly treated, definitely, by the fans and a sector of the press. It's a bit of an agenda against Bale, because he doesn't speak the language and that kind of thing, and because he's a bit of a loner, because he plays golf and all these things, which, are not the worst things in the world. But there's the feeling that maybe he hasn't integrated, assimilated as much as he could have done. But he scored very, very important goals, of course, in Champions League final last season, going back to when they won La Decima against Atletico. That Copa del Rey final goal as well. But a lot of that's forgotten. In Madrid, you're only as good as your last game. And even Cristiano Ronaldo was booed here, let's remember. So very, very demanding fans. And yeah, certainly taking it out on Bale. Some of it is harsh. But yeah, he's had a disappointing time of late, definitely. I think, you know, when they maybe go through a bit of a dry spell in Europe and he maybe comes back here to play in these Legends games, that kind of thing, he might be more fondly remembered than he is being at the moment.
Yeah.
Which I think is unfair.
I want to talk to you more in another time about the rebuilding job that's going to happen at Madrid this summer and who will be doing that. But just briefly, one more question before I let you go, Ben. On Barcelona, the title race is surely over now, isn't it? But whenever I see Barca play this year, they look pretty average to me. They don't look like a really, really good team. They're still my tip for the Champions League, but am I just seeing the games where they look average, or have they been? Are they leading a league that's been pretty poor this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one because with under Ernesto Valverde, they've put in a lot of very average performances, and yet they seem to get through it, and they seem to get through these games where Real Madrid and sometimes Atletico can't, and it's because of Messi. You know, look at this era with Lionel Messi, and he's the one that consistently produces brilliance week in, week out. And here he's given them the edge again. They're 7 points clear of Atletico. Atletico hanging in there. Real Madrid 12 points behind now. I just can't see them doing anything. The two Clásicos have gone. They've lost the head-to-head record as well. That's too much to make up. Atletico, I just think, have got too much to do as well. And, you know, Barcelona, you know, been too good again domestically, even though, as you say, sometimes they haven't been brilliant. But, you know, winning leagues, as you know, is about consistency. And I suppose it's going to be in Europe, once again, where Barcelona are truly tested in the Champions League, where they haven't got beyond the last eight for the last three seasons now.
Ben, can you do me a favour? Can you go to the top of the Bernabeu, take a photo down and tweet it to us?
I can.
I want that view.
Cool. Do you want a special hashtag? What's the Twitter account? Let me know again.
Our Twitter account should know this, @footballfanspod.
Cool.
Let us know.
I should do that once I've hung up
for me. Okay, nice one, pal. Have a good game tonight.
Yeah, speak to you soon.
Cheers, pal. Take care. Josh, Ben says that he feels that he hasn't been great, Bale, this season, but he also feels that he's been harshly judged and treated. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I was messing there about you being a fan of Bale, but I know that you're not his biggest fan.
Jordan,
what's gone wrong for Gareth Bale?
Well, just like to get that on record again. I'm not a Gareth Bale fan.
All right.
I'm not a Gareth Bale fan.
I just ended that bit out anyway, but
I'm not his biggest fan, to be fair. So for me to sit here and slightly defend him slightly, it's going to sound a bit weird.
No, I'm not going to defend him. I'm just kind of, why do you think he's been...
I'm going to.
Okay.
The reason I'm going to say that is because I think that the expectations, well, I don't know why he's not starting today. Right.
Mm.
And the reason why I say that is because although Vinicius Jr. has played relatively well, he misses a lot of chances.
Mm.
So he's a good player. I wouldn't have started him today. And Gareth Bale is their second top scorer this season. I think he's got the best record in terms of minutes per goal this season. So Benzema's on 15, Gareth Bale's on 13. Vasquez, who is starting today, has 2 goals this season. Vinicius Jr., who's also starting today, has 2 goals this season. So this seems like scapegoating. I think they want Gareth Bale out.
Mm.
And seems like this is like what they were doing to Di Maria when they wanted him to get rid of him. And, you know, it seems like a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But this has happened before. So I don't know if he's going to leave. But, yeah.
There's only... If the intention for Madrid, Jack, is to try and get Bale out the door... Again, as Ben mentioned earlier on, he's on a massive contract. Okay, they won't be demanding the money they paid for him when they signed him,
no.
But they're gonna want some proper transfer fee for him. He has been known to have some serious injuries that have hampered his time at Madrid. And even his latter year and a half at Spurs, he has some naughty injuries. How's this going to end? If he's back in the Prem, there's only 2 or 3 clubs you'd think can afford him, for starters. And do they need him, those 2 or 3 clubs?
The problem is that Gareth Bale is also... When he's on form, when he's not injured, he's a wonderful footballer and remains a wonderful footballer. And I think that it's easy to forget that in the fact that he's, you know, had a bad season. He scored 13 goals. Like, let's not like kind of write it off as, you know, he hasn't played very much, but he's still banged in 13. He's still got a couple of assists, I think maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And that's still decent numbers for someone who hasn't been starting recently. Look, Solari has his favourites, and that's what's happened. The reason that he will continue to get things at Madrid and will continue to be pushed into those squads and stuff is because Perez loves him. Florentino Perez loves Bale. Mm-hmm. But Solari doesn't, and he doesn't trust him. And what he's got there is he's, you know, in the same way that he's completely isolated Isco, and we haven't seen Isco in these Real Madrid squads, you know, a player of, like, immense talent. Now, you know, let's not beat around the bush. Mm. Isco is a wonderful footballer. And you know, those kind of players are being kept out by Solari's favourites, who, incidentally, are lots of players that came through the youth teams with him. The likes of Reguilon, who's been playing at left back, the likes of Lucas Vazquez, as you mentioned, those players who he trusts because he's been playing with them for years. And you can understand that because he was under severe pressure and like on his own job for a while. But what he's done is managed to isolate some of the superstars in this team. And in doing so, he'll have driven their transfer prices down for Madrid, which is a dangerous thing to do. The other thing that's interesting is that if Chelsea's transfer ban goes through, they're one of, I think, three teams in the Premier League that could probably afford Bale's wages. I think their best bet is to offer Gareth Bale and 100 million to Tottenham for Harry Kane. That would be the best way, I think, that they would be able to kind of somehow gain out of this when they've been going so badly and it's been going very much south, because there's obviously the nostalgia value and all that in doing that.
Could Spurs and would Spurs pay the wages that...
I don't know. Probably not, but I think would Bale going back to his spiritual home at their first season at a new ground, maybe he'd be willing to take a bit of a cut on it because there's some sort of nostalgic value to that and all those things. So, look, I mean, I'm not here to suggest that I know the terms or whatever, but I do think that if Madrid are going to get rid of him, that would be a sensible road to go down.
Can I just say...
Go on.
I'll be so annoyed...
If you get him.
If in the summer United sign Gareth Bale, that would ruin my summer.
I'm not so sure you would, because it's looking like it's going to be Ole or Poch, and I just don't think any of those two managers will sign him.
Well, I don't necessarily think we would anymore. I think the ship sailed.
Yeah, I think
but
so. As well.
If we do, I'll be so annoyed.
I mean, there's so much you can say about that because he is still a very, very good footballer.
No, I'm not
saying that you have to like him.
I don't think he's good, though. Transfer fee and wages is going to be good enough for us to leave Martial out of the team or Rashford out of the team. And so there is one more spot on the right wing.
Yeah.
I don't want him there. He's injury prone. I don't trust his injury record. I don't think he can play 40 games a season for us, 50 games a season for us.
But does he need to, or does he need to just be that impact?
Our right wing needs, like, we haven't had a right winger for so many years that if that person became Gareth Bale next season, like, I don't know what I'll do.
Wow.
Might slip my wrists.
Oh, Jesus. No.
It must be well nice to be a top six fan.
These are the problems that you have. Turning down Gareth Bale.
I know.
All right, let's move on, guys. Let's talk about Brendan Rodgers. Let's have a chat about him now. I want to focus a little bit less on him becoming the manager at Leicester now, and we'll do that with the Leicester fan at some point. But I want to talk a little bit more about him, and I want to find out if he receives unfair press, and I've got some kind of theories as to whether he does or doesn't, and if he does, why he does, and if he doesn't, why he doesn't. To do so, I want to bring in a Celtic fan here, Justin from 20 Minute Tim's Pod. Justin, how you doing, man?
Yeah, not bad.
Good, man. I'm good, mate. I'm good. Just coming on the pod, mate. So first of all, are you one of the Celtic fans that, you know, is very angry and vociferous in your belief that he betrayed you and you're very angry about it? Or are you one of the fans that actually understands completely why he chose to leave Celtic?
I'm probably in the middle. What I've seen over the past few weeks online and on the various channels that I go on... This is one of the kind of biggest issues that's ever united the Celtic fans in terms of we're all in a bit of shock that he would leave at that stage. Don't get me wrong, I think we were all under the impression he was going to leave eventually in the summer, but to do it kind of via the back door, because he didn't even say goodbye to the players, it just left a bit of a sour taste. And I think a lot of maybe the banner was pretty accurate for me. There's obviously been other unsavoury stuff that's maybe come up, but as I say, a lot of people were kind of waiting for him to leave in the summer, but to do it at such short notice was a bit.
So it's not that he left; it's how he left that you're upset about.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he was there, was he a well loved figure, or despite winning the trophies and the success that you had, were there always, did you always kind of have a bit of a side eye about any of his kind of characteristics and his way of management, or was you completely happy for the time that he was there?
No, he was a bit, domestically anyway, he was a bit of a god. He obviously didn't lose a domestic game for 69 games, so the funny thing is, ironically, he didn't need to give us all the platitudes and the gushing praise about the club, because we knew that he was a top-class manager anyway. So, fair enough, he came into the club to 13,000 fans in the stadium. And I think at that point, he realised again how big a club it was, but he didn't need to kind of keep going in terms of saying it was his dream job and stuff like that when he was delivering. You know, he could have slowly but surely kind of softened that approach and kind of prepared us for what might happen. But, and I think he did do that to an extent with last summer's transfer window. I think he made it clear that he maybe wasn't getting what he wanted in terms of John McGinn and a fullback from Sporting Lisbon, I believe. So I think it's slowly but surely, it was written that he was going to leave, but again, it's just the timing that's just left everyone totally scunnered.
Do you think that, I mean, take your Celtic hat off for a second, do you think that going to Leicester is a bigger job for a manager than staying at Celtic?
It's a better league. It's not a bigger club, but a better club.
Is it a better job?
It's difficult. I don't. They've won the league, so they literally can't. He can't improve that at all. Obviously, he can get them to a point where they're maybe looking towards Europe and getting into Europe. But he's on the back foot in terms of Europe. He's going to start further back than what Celtic start back, because we do have a half a shot at the Champions League, whereas I think Leicester at a push would maybe get into the group stages of Europa League. But that's going to take a massive effort, and next season, I'd imagine. So that's a big job, but like he said himself, the Celtic job's one of the biggest you can get. But don't get me wrong, that us Celtic fans do know that we are a bit of a stepping stone for players. It's just disappointing that a manager, the so-called supporter, would do that as well, you know.
So what are the things, how well do you think he'll do at Leicester, and what are the things that you would advise Leicester fans to maybe look out for that maybe you saw during his time at Celtic that you didn't like?
I think he'll be good. I think everything will be taken on pretty quickly, and he'll make a quick start, obviously not apart from Sunday, but I think he will get his points across quickly to the players. It might be a bit more difficult to deliver stuff when he's dealing with a much kind of bigger and richer dressing room, basically, but his style of football, especially the first season, was incredible. The only issue we have as well is just some of the defeats we had in Europe. He didn't really change much in terms of his approach. He always wanted to play out from the back, which is commendable, but there were issues. Obviously, we conceded quite a lot of goals to bigger teams, so I don't know how we would do against the Guardiolas, etc., you know. So, but he definitely tried to play football the right way, so we'll see what happens.
And just finally, Justin, is he going to go down as a Celtic legend, or is the way that he left slightly tarnished that?
No, it's definitely tarnished.
Really? Despite all those trophies and that long run?
It's definitely tarnished the way he's done it. Don't get me wrong, those times, those 2 years were incredible, and we've got a chat. He's left us with a chance of another treble, but he's also left us with a kind of bloated squad with a few decent, pretty good signings, and then Cham and Edward. But over the piece, he was a brilliant manager, but it just totally sours those 2 years.
Justin, cheers for coming on, man. Thanks, man.
No worries.
Cheers,
thanks,
pal. So, Jack, what are your thoughts on Brendan Rodgers? What do you think of him? What do you think is a good manager? Do you think this is the right level for him? Or do you think he should have stayed at Celtic, seen the year out, won the treble, and then gone from there?
Yeah, I mean, all of those things, basically.
You think he should have stayed?
Absolutely, I think he should have stayed.
Even if Leicester said, we want a manager now or forget it?
No, because I do think that Leicester, you know, the Leicester season is kind of dead. Let's get to the real of it. They're almost certainly not going to make the Europa spots this year. Yes, it's plausible, but I think it's exceptionally unlikely at this point with the amount of work they've got to do to catch up there. I think that there's plenty there that he could have said. Brendan Rodgers could have said, if you want me this badly, you wait till the summer. And I think they would have waited. In fact, they would have put a lot of money on Leicester waiting for that. Rodgers is a funny character. And he does have this weird thing where every job he goes into, he's like, this is my dream job. And I'm like, Brendan, they can't all be your dream jobs. And Swansea definitely wasn't.
Yeah, they can.
Now, Swansea definitely wasn't. But he was a Celtic fan growing up.
Yep,
to walk into that job and walk into paradise and all of those things and be able to kind of turn around. There's something in that banner. There is something correct in that banner. The kind of from immortality to mediocrity. There's so much element of truth in there, because the 10 in the row is something that's never been completed in Scottish football. Both Celtic and Rangers have 9 league titles on the trot, and neither have ever done 10 on the spin. This is the greatest opportunity that Celtic will ever have to win 10 on the spin. This will be 8 this summer. So two to go, basically. I'm not saying that Rodgers should have seen it out. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But if he'd waited till the end of the season, seen out the 8th, done the treble-treble, and then handed over for someone else to see it out, he would have gone down as part of that immortality. As such, he won't, because the feeling and the vehement of, like, you know, to be able to just walk out on a club you support is not a thing. Like, would you be able to walk out on the club you support if someone else offered you a job?
It depends on the job.
Does it?
Well, yeah, he might feel that Leicester is the best job that he can get in the Premier League.
Right now, yeah.
And if Leicester appoint a manager between now and the end of the season, that opportunity's gone.
But Brendan Rodgers has
a track record. He's got to wait again and then again. And then, do you know what I mean? So
he has a track record, which is wonderful, across quite a lot of good clubs.
You think he'd get a job at some point?
I think he would be getting a job. Yeah, it might not be the Leicester job, but you know what? You know, there are a couple of teams. It might be the Everton job, right? Or somewhere like that. Those teams are all in the same bracket.
Yeah,
it's not a kind of, take the Real Madrid job now, they're never going to offer it to someone else, is it? And this is no disrespect to Leicester. I think Leicester are a big football club. But he's completely Justin's completely right in what he says, in that it's a better league, but there's no way on earth that Leicester is a bigger club than Celtic.
I kind of understand if they said to him, it's come now or forget it. I understand why he left. Yeah. But if we park Leicester to one side for a second, on Brendan Rodgers himself, do you feel that a lot of the reason why people... Do you think he's a good coach? Or do you think that people actually see him as a bit of a caricature because of the teeth, the self-reverence, the documentary they did with Liverpool, you know, the apparent life-size portrait of himself in his house? Are these all things that make people just think he loves himself a little bit? They don't take him seriously.
I think he's got an image problem. I don't think he's...
PR problem.
PR problem. I don't think he's got a good agent. And I don't think he has a good team behind him. But probably some of that is just his personality anyway. Maybe it's difficult to manage that way. Because, like, when he left Swansea and went to Liverpool and he was doing really well, all of a sudden, like, stuff started coming out. Like, he left his family, you know, hooked, shacked up with a new young model and, like, got his teeth done and... And he always reminds me of the Brenton character. Do you know from, what's that show? The Office.
Oh, David Brent. David Brent, yes.
Like, he almost reminds me of the type of him. Like, even when he went to Liverpool and he had his first, like, talking to the team and he did that whole envelope thing.
Yeah.
That Fergie did. And you would have thought, like, Ferguson did that after having won the title with the lads before.
He had credit in the bank. Yeah.
You just gone into this team. You've come from Swansea. And you've immediately said, three of you are going to let us down this season. And done this whole... I don't know.
Do you think he's that's his level? Or do you... Because I'm surprised. I'm surprised you took it. Because I thought he might think he's that good. I think he thought, if Poch goes in the summer, I'll wait for the Spurs job.
Here's what happened. I think, like... I personally think he's a decent manager. I don't think he's a top-tier manager. I don't think he's...
So Leicester's about right?
Yeah, I think Leicester...
Even Leicester, you think, maybe punching above his weight a little bit?
No. Oh,
okay,
yeah, Leicester, Everton, your Watfords...
West Ham.
Your West Hams. Like, I think that's his level. I think maybe he could go, like, to a club... Clubs that are pushing for top six, maybe trying to punch into the top four. I don't think he's a Premier League winning manager. He almost came very close to it in Liverpool that season. And in fact, they had a really, really good season. I think they scored 101 goals, played some fantastic football. So he's got a lot of things going for him. Plays good football, brings through young talent, plays attractive football, but he, the whole problem with him has always been defensive, the defensive side of the game.
Yeah.
Right. And even you could look at it like he spent 4 years at Liverpool, didn't win a trophy. And Klopp also has spent about 4 years in Liverpool, hasn't won a trophy.
I think it's his fourth year, yeah.
But I think one of the main problems at Liverpool is that he wasn't in control of the transfers.
Mm.
And Liverpool didn't have very good defenders, didn't have very good goalkeepers. All things that Klopp struggled with until Liverpool changed their transfer policy.
Mm.
So there's an argument to say that Liverpool let him down slightly. But I think he has an image problem because when he left Liverpool, when Wenger was leaving Arsenal, he was putting his name out for that job and he didn't get anywhere near it.
Mm.
A few other jobs came up and he was putting his name out for he didn't get anywhere near it.
The England job at one point he was...
And the England job, right. Mm. And it's like, I think like nobody wanted to hire him for those jobs. So that's how he... Personally, that's why I believe he ended up at Celtic.
I think that's fair. So Jack, I think that Brendan Rodgers suffers from what I call the Nicholas Bentner syndrome. So it's controversial. I've said it before, but I genuinely believe this. My biggest issue with Nicholas Bentner, I think he was a good to very good Premier League striker. I think his problem was he thought he was better than he was. So I think he thought, I could be Van Persie, I could be Berbatov, I could be... And it's like, if he just accepted how good he was, he could have been a Giroud, a solid 15-goal season striker. It's not going to set the world on fire, but he could have been a top six, top eight striker that scored goals. I think Rodgers has the same thing. I think he thinks he's a little bit better than he is. And if he humbled himself a little bit and did what he can do, he could have a decent Premier League career. Do you agree with Joss that he's actually a good coach, but he has a PR problem?
Yeah, I'm pretty much exactly on board. I think that's probably a nail on the head. I'd go so far, I think he's an excellent coach.
Okay.
I really do. And I think that he would do a wonderful job with a top four side. I think he could do a real job. I think, in fact, what you said earlier, if Poch left Spurs, Brendan Rodgers would be a perfect fit. But like you say, plays really good football, always plays out from the back, brings through young players.
British players.
All the things that you want from a coach at that level, who gives people an opportunity who deserve it. And you know, we've seen that at Celtic. Like, they've brought talented players on. He's developed them and sold them for big fees. And even if he hasn't sold them, the likes of Kieran Tierney, who...
He will go for a big
fee.
Well,
you know, Celtic fans would hope not, let's be honest. But, you know, he's regarded as a top-level left-back. And you know, there are top clubs sniffing around Kieran Tierney. And I think that that's testament to his medal. But you look at Dembele, Roberts, who all came through those Celtic systems. Armstrong, who's obviously done quite well at Southampton, who are a poor side, in truth. And lots of players. Callum McGregor, they've all developed. James Forrest, underneath Brendan Rodgers, they've all developed into better players than they were before. And that is saying something. And I think that if you gave him a massive opportunity, a big club, he would do well. Especially given the fact that, you know, it's not like Pochettino has gone in and won loads of trophies, is it?
Well.
It's one of those things,
but
right?
Do you think the two things, that, as well as his PR image that go against him, are one, as Josh mentioned, defensively, if you're going to a top four, top six club, you can't let in the kind of... That's why Liverpool flopped in the end, and the Gerrard thing was the visible thing.
The catalyst,
they let in a lot of goals year. Secondly, in Europe is Celtic. I know it's Celtic. I don't think they got out of the qualification process.
They didn't this year, no. They did the last 2 years, though, and they were both in the Champions League
twice in a row.
And then this year, they got through the Europa League group and it all fell apart against Valencia, who are a good side. So, you know, you look at that, and yes, he's not brilliant defensively, I agree, but you also don't go 69 games unbeaten domestically by being terrible at defensive coaching, right?
I'm struggling to agree with that one. In that league...
Okay, all right, but okay.
It's impressive, but it's not something that I would put on the CV is the reason why I should be the Spurs manager.
Here's the problem, right, I think, with him going to Celtic, right, is that he's done this amazing job at Celtic, 69 games unbeaten, but the guy before him was Neil Lennon, who won the double at Celtic.
Ronnie Dyer.
Oh, no, the guy before that was Neil Lennon, who won the double at Celtic twice. Who the hell was Neil Lennon?
He's the current Celtic manager.
I know, but in the grand scheme of things,
so you're saying,
right,
that,
right,
makes Rodgers' achievements a little bit meh.
I think if I was a director of football, I will discredit kind of some of what he's done at Celtic, because I think it's not a competitive league. Rangers weren't there, you know. Like, I don't know. It just seemed... I think he'd done a good job, and then his record in Europe wasn't great, right? Whereas I think Celtic kind of did a little bit better in Europe before him
under O'Neill, and I think Lennon.
Right. Whereas I think, personally, I think he deserves more credit for his Liverpool tenure than he gets. Because, like I said before, the transfer part of Liverpool...
They handcuffed him, didn't
they? They handcuffed him, and he almost won the title. You could kind of argue he's got closer to the title than Klopp has if they don't win it this season.
My problem,
with a worse side.
With that, and what you're saying about, you know, him thinking he's slightly better than he is, I don't think it's quite that. I think there is a problem with his image. But I think it's that... He feels like
he's having himself a little bit. Come on.
I would never doubt that. Don't get me wrong. But like, also, like, you've got to back yourself. It's a tough world, right? In that football world, you don't back yourself, no one else is going to. Mm. And I kind of rate that, if I'm honest. What I don't get is that he goes into every job and he's like, I've always dreamed of being here. Like, this is my home.
Apparently, when he got the Liverpool job, he told this story in his first press conference about being on the sofa as a little boy watching the cup final in 79 or whatever it was, and did the exact same story on his first press conference at Celtic.
And you know what, like, there are pictures of him in a Celtic shirt when he was a young boy. It's just mad that he doesn't do it once and then leaves it every time. Like, there's a game, he's like, the fans are wonderful today. Like, Brendan, no one's turned up. It's an under-19s game. Like, Swansea's like, oh, Swansea's the city I always dreamed of living in my whole life.
Yeah.
No, it's you not. Haven't. Like, it's just one of those things where you're like, you're just doing too much, man. Just like, relax a little bit. Like, it's cool. Everyone's happy with the job you're doing.
Final point, Josh. Yeah. At Leicester, just finishing up, he's at Leicester now. That feels to me about his level, personally, as you said. And I think what he's got there is a crop of young players, which we've seen with young players, he can develop. And it's players like Gray. You know, I'm a massive fan of Gray. I wanted him at Arsenal.
Yeah.
He's flatlined a little bit in the last 18 months. I can see someone like him kicking on under Rodgers. Can you see this time next year, Leicester banging on that door for sixth place?
I think it's harsh to say Leicester's his level. I think those clubs between 10th and 6th, he can definitely do a good job there.
Mm.
And possibly, I think maybe he's got another level up to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think necessarily think he's like title winning manager, but he's probably got like top 6, top, picking on the door of top 4 kind of level. But I think, he could do a good job at Leicester as long as they've got a little bit of investment to do. I think Vardy's, what, 32 now?
I think it's 31, maybe going on 32.
Ian Acho, I'm not sure about that guy. Mm. But they've got some good players. Like, if they can sign Tillisman, if they can keep hold of Maguire, I think Gray's a really good player. I'm not 100% sure. It seems like the managers don't fancy him sometimes. He's in and out of the team a lot. I think he needs a manager to trust him. And I think Rodgers is the right type of manager. He seems to be able to get the best out of young attacking players or just attacking players in general.
He does.
So that could work out really well, especially if they were to sign Tillisman in midfield and they keep hold of Ndidi. I think they've got a good base. Team.
Got a good
they've
keeper
got a good
base,
a good team.
Got good fullbacks.
Good keepers. Yeah, so maybe he could be able to like develop them in a couple of years to start knocking on the door of top 6. But at the end, we're going to talk about managers. Is he going to give him that time? One thing to say is that Leicester fans wouldn't expect them to complain about Brendan Rodgers because he is the type of manager to play a more progressive attacking style of football. So that should probably buy him some more time, but we'll just have to see.
We'll see if that good football can keep them in and around that 7th, 8th position, because that's what Puel's done. But anyway, let's have a very brief talk, guys, about Juventus. I want to talk about Juve. They're in action tomorrow. I should have this written down, but is it tomorrow? It's tomorrow, okay. I knew that, yep. Josh, start with you. Do Juventus have to win the Champions League to not be the laughingstock of Europe?
Jordan.
And I ask that question because I'm thinking the financial outlay, they've got Ronaldo, who they obviously identified as the final jigsaw in the puzzle to winning the Champions League. They've not won it for 10 years? Not won it for a while.
A long time.
A long, long time.
Yes.
And if they don't win it this year, or at least get to the final again, does that just make them a little bit of a ha-ha?
No.
With that manager, with that Ronaldo.
You always are. All right, put it like this. Laughing stock of Europe this season is Real Madrid. Hands down. Sold Cristiano Ronaldo. You expected Vasquez, Asensio, and a bell on one foot to score 50, 60 goals. Like, not going to happen. For me, they're the laughing stock of Europe. I don't think
even if they win the Champions League.
They're not going to win the Champions League. But if they won the Champions League, then it'll be great. Okay. I don't see them winning the Champions League. I don't think they're good enough. Santiago Solari is not taking them to Champions League.
I agree.
So they get the title for me. I've lost stock of Europe. I think obviously Juventus wanted to win the Champions League, and that's why they went out to get Cristiano Ronaldo. But along with that, I also think that Cristiano Ronaldo signing was because of a commercial injection to their engine, right, of the club to boost their image across the globe. And you see that I think their share price is trading at 98% greater than it was before they signed him today, right? Which means that they've done a good job. They've increased their share value, the value of their company, by almost 100% just by signing Cristiano Ronaldo. Okay. Probably that wasn't the only thing.
No, but
that's a significant thing that happened that made it happen. Then you go on to the fact that they're going to do this, raise money in the market now, doing a bond issuance. Again, off the back of signing Cristiano Ronaldo. So I think that over the past 10 years, you can look at Juventus as a club who, if you look at their financial and commercial dealings, probably one of the best clubs in Europe to look at about how they've gone about doing their job. And the Cristiano Ronaldo signing probably is the icing on the cake because that's another thing that's worked. But, you know, I think that they made a couple of mistakes. I don't think their midfield is good enough. And, you know, they've got a midfield of, Khedira, Emre Can, Pjanic is probably the only one there that's of like really high quality, I would say. Cristiano Ronaldo in the attack, Dybala hasn't really kicked on, and then you've got Cuadrado and Douglas Costa. So I just think they're missing, they don't quite yet have the team to be a champion. I think their team, when they got to the final, when they had Vidal, Pogba, I think that team's better than this team now.
The one with Pirlo in.
I think the team that they got to the final after that is better than this team now. So somehow they've managed to get Cristiano Ronaldo, but now have a worse team.
The worst team.
So,
Okay, I'm going to come to you in a second, Jack, but I want to bring in the Goal Juventus correspondent, Romeo. Romeo, how you doing, sir?
Hi, guys.
You all right, mate? How you doing? Thanks for coming on the pod, mate. So we're just talking here, Romeo, about Juventus, and I've asked a question. Do Juventus have to win the Champions League this season to not be the laughing stock of Europe? Now, it's obviously a very inflammatory question I'm asking there. But considering the investment, the manager they have, their pedigree in Europe, and Ronaldo in that team, do they need to be really getting to the final of this Champions League this season?
So, when you buy Cristiano Ronaldo, you must try to win the Champions League. We know that. Mr. President Andrea Agnelli knew that. But, of course, if you see the performance in Wanda Metropolitana against Atletico, you know clear how Juventus can win the Champions League, because the squad is overrated. Okay, you have Cristiano Ronaldo, but your midfield is not like, for example, Real Madrid midfield. So I think that this Juventus can try to achieve the remontada against Atletico, and that means a lot, especially for the future, especially for the future of Max Allegri.
Do the Juventus fans expect this team with Ronaldo to win the Champions League, or do they agree with you that it's a very good squad, but the midfield isn't one of the best midfields in the competition?
So, Juventus won their last Champions League, if I'm right, 23 years ago. So, with Cristiano Ronaldo, I repeat, you have to try to win the Champions League. He won this competition in 5 times, so the expectation between Juventus fans are so high. But in the Wanda Metropolitano, we understand the limits of this squad, and now it's very difficult for Max Allegri to try to resolve this problem, because okay, Juventus won in Napoli, Juventus are going to win another Scudetto, but in Europe, in Champions League, the story is different, and this Juventus is not able to win this competition.
If Juventus did win the Champions League this season, Would you expect Allegri to leave and consider that job done, new challenge?
I'm pretty sure that Massimo Allegri will leave the next season because he wants to do an experience abroad. Maybe he's the first choice for Real Madrid to replace Solari. And I'm sure that Juventus are talking with Zinedine Zidane, that is the first choice for Mr. President Andrea Agnelli, because he's a Juventus former player, because he knows how he can win the Champions League also as manager, because he won three Champions League in a row with Real Madrid. So I can say that Zidane will replace surely Allegri, but I can say that he's the first choice for Juventus.
And just finally, Romeo, you're taking one of my top players, Aaron Ramsey, to Italy next season. What's the reaction from the Juventus fans towards this signing? Are they excited? Do they know who he is? What's the reaction? And also, where will he play?
That's a very good question. First of all, we have to understand the coach. I think that he can play behind the striker. As in Italy, we say trequartista. Honestly, Juventus fans now are focused on this game against Atletico. But for sure, they are excited for this signing because Ramsey can improve the quality of the midfield. I don't think that he's a very, very top player, but he's a good player. And if we see the level of this midfield, he's ready to improve the quality, for sure.
Just finally, very quickly, do Juventus qualify from this round? Do you think they'll get through to the next round?
No. My personal opinion, it's very difficult because Atletico Madrid are one of the favorites to win the Champions League. They will play the final at home. So I think that Juventus have few chances to achieve the remontada goal.
Romeo, ciao. Grazie mille.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Jack, just wrap up on this one. Do you think that is a good signing for Juventus to take Aaron Ramsey there, or did that one perplex you a little bit?
No,
and where do you see him playing?
He's not going to play as a trequartista. That got me. I thought he was going to say exactly. I was like, I'm ready to like say it with him. He's not going to play as a trequartista. He's going to play as a mezzala in a midfield three. I do think that it's a good little bit of business, if I'm honest, and I think that he will flourish there. He's obviously been good for Arsenal, and maybe you'd say more than good. But I think he's an excellent player. Technically, you're very, very gifted, but also dynamic, runs a lot, has a lot in the engine, and can score goals. I think that in a technical league like Serie A, he has the ability to flourish. And I think that he will do a lot of very good work at Juventus.
And do you think that Juventus, going back to them in the Champions League, do you think that they almost need to win it soon to edge themselves in that kind of trio of Bayern, Real and Barca who have dominated European football in the last decade in particular? They feel, with the squad they've got, they will feel like we should be one of the top three squads or top three teams in Europe.
That's the question.
That's a boring one. I've got to come with something a little bit more inflammatory.
If they don't win the Champions League, they can't put themselves in that kind of triumvirate. You might throw the likes of someone like City into the same category as Juventus, in that their squad is good enough to be considered one of the best in Europe. But until they win that top-tier trophy, you know, you've got to have that in the tank in sort of the last 10 years or so to be considered it. And PSG as well. One thing I would say is that the lack of competition in Serie A this year, and I'm not saying that it has been completely empty because Juventus have struggled weirdly in some strange games, notably against Atalanta twice. But they have really struggled in some of those games, and I think that might be hurting them in the Champions League. And you could say the same about PSG, and with no disrespect, Josh, I think if they'd come, you know, things just didn't tend to go your way at Old Trafford, and I think that if those two injuries hadn't come early on, then it would be looking at a very different story in the PSG United game. I think that it would have, I still think they might have just about the quality to get through that tie, but I don't think the PSG will be getting through a semi-final, and they have never got to a semi-final since 94-95. And part of that, I do think, is due to the fact that they have never had that much like week in, week out competition in the leagues they're in. And I think that that's hurting Juventus this season. The first team they came up against are genuinely world class in Atletico Madrid. They've struggled.
Yeah, they have. All right, let's move on to our last topic, guys. Let's just rattle through. We won't be doing any football, fantasy football update this week, only because I want to squeeze in so much. So we'll be doing a fantasy football update next week.
Is that because you're no longer the top
10?
Well,
that might be a reason, but let's just move on from that anyway. Let's talk about Sarri. I'll stick with you, Jack. Is Sarri misunderstood, or is he just not good enough to win a Premier League at a team that has desires to win a Premier League?
I mean, the first thing I would say about this is that if Chelsea have genuine desires to win a Premier League, they need to sort out their backroom structure because it's an absolute state. They need to appoint a director of football because they seem to be a club with no vision. And there are plenty of problems going on at Chelsea. And Maurizio Sarri is not foremost amongst those. I think that he's a wonderful manager. I
know you like him, don't
love
you?
Him.
You like him.
I think that his style of football, if he was given the tools and the freedom and the time to implement a project that he did at Napoli, at Empoli, with the kind of resources that Chelsea have, he would be able to mount a challenge for the Premier League. I don't think he's going to be given that time or those resources.
Josh, do you agree? Do you think he will be there next season? And do you think he is a Premier League? You said that you don't think Rodgers is quite a Premier League winning manager. Do you think that Sarri is maybe just in that tier below?
I don't know. I don't know. I think he's got potential. Mm. I think anybody who could take a team in the state that Napoli were in and take them to... The only reason they didn't win the title, I mean, I think they have the second most highest points record in Serie A history ever.
To not win the title?
No.
Second. The only reason they didn't win the title because Juventus that year broke the record even more.
Okay.
Right? So it's ridiculous. And I think they played as well, really, really well in the Champions League. So not just domestically, but also on continental at the same time in the same season. Mm. I think, like, going back to, like, looking at his time at Napoli, they struggled a little bit in the first season. You know, they didn't really, like, they played really well for some spells and they played really poorly for some spells. Mm, mm. And you can kind of say that that's kind of similar to what they're doing now with Chelsea. And maybe it's just that he, like Jack says, he needs time to work on his project. Because you have to remember as well, Chelsea, they tried to do this a couple of times now. Like going from their defensive first setup to being more of a ball-playing football team. I don't think it's that easy to just turn a club that has a specific way of playing to another way of playing that
in a year, yeah.
Right? And like, you know, Villas-Boas was sacked, although I don't really think he was great anyway. And then Solari was sacked, who tried to do the same thing. And maybe if Chelsea really want to do this, they need to stick with him, right? But I can't say that he's a top manager because at the end of the day he hasn't won.
There's no pedigree to show that. Yeah,
he doesn't have the pedigree. But what he done at Napoli is enough for me to say that he is a good manager, and he has the potential to be. Like he was a weird person that before this, looking at this Chelsea situation,
you would have considered.
I would have considered him to say let's take a gamble on someone like him, and I'm not sure I agree that he hasn't been given the resources. I mean, they spent quite a lot of money this summer. And they signed...
And Higuain.
They didn't spend anything on Higuain.
His wages ain't going to be cheap.
They signed like £72 million on the goalkeeper, who was like the goalkeeper needed to play out from the back, etc.
To be fair, was that not just because Courtois left?
Yes. They signed Jorginho, who was like, you know, I need this guy to make everything work. And now they've given him Higuain as well. So that's like three really important pieces. Mm. And so I think as well as Chelsea, I always say that it's a two-way street with managers and clubs. As well as Chelsea giving Sarri time, Sarri needs to also show
them something
progress when he gets what he needs as well.
Jack, something that's annoyed me as well in the last couple of weeks about the kind of commentary on Sarri, it was a game where he brought on Who's the right back? They hardly play.
Zappacosta
yeah. for Aspilicueta.
It was against United.
Was it that game? Yeah. Yes, and that's why they lost that game. And everyone was like, oh, why doesn't he just bring on... He had Giroud on the bench. And it's this kind of very British idea that to score a goal, you have to bring on a striker. And it was like the failure to understand what this... You might disagree with what he's trying to do, but understand why he's doing it. He might have brought on Zappacosta because he thought, might have thought, the best way to get a goal is to get a more attacking fullback on that can supply my strikers more, rather than this British attitude of, just get five strikers in and we'll score a goal.
Yeah.
Do you feel that if he does lose his job, it will be not only because of the 6-0 and the 4-0 to Bournemouth and all those single bad results in the cup final loss, it will be because the British press just don't understand why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The lack of understanding of what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Why you might disagree with it, at least understand it.
I think the Zappacosta example is potentially a bad example of what you're trying to say, but I see where you're coming from. And I think the best example of is this mental kind of thing in the press that N'Golo Kante has to play at the bottom of a midfield three. Yeah. Right, so... In a Sarri system, the player at the base of the midfield gets the ball all the time, like constantly. And Jorginho is good at that because he's good at passing. Mm. N'Golo Kante is a world-class player. Like, let's not take anything away from that. But the one thing you don't want him doing is passing the ball around. Like, he's a destroyer. He's a kind of creative force in some ways because he takes players away because of his running ability. And, you know, we've seen him get into the box a bit more. And I think that's actually probably another aspect of his game that's been developed and kind of underappreciated in some ways. He's obviously not a natural goal scorer, but he has the engine to do that. Mm. And I think that they're saying, like, oh, he has to play centre defensive midfield. It's like this kind of mental idea that he's played at the bottom of those kind of midfields before. He hasn't. Mm. He played alongside Matic there when he played at Chelsea. He played alongside Drinkwater, who was the sort of sitting midfielder that just sprayed passes. He's always been a box-to-box destroyer, and it makes no sense that everyone's just like, oh, well, if he played Kante at the base, he'd be fine. It just doesn't make sense. And that, more than anything else, I think is the point that illustrates exactly what's saying. You have to look at these things in their context, and you see wherever he's gone, he's utilised this system. He needs more kind of things in terms of He needs his third kind of midfielder to actually produce more. And I think we'll see more of Loftus-Cheek because he's actually a player in there that can create, that can move about, that offers passing channels. And I think that when that comes through and he continues to develop that, we'll see more kind of adaptation from Sarri than the things he's used to, because he has more options in the positions he wants to change.
Just final answer, Josh. Do you feel that Chelsea are in a position now where they almost can't sack him if this transfer ban does kick? Well, if the transfer ban comes in, they're probably going to lose Hazard in the summer. They don't want to be looking for a new manager as well. Do you think they might have to keep him by default?
Before I go to that, I'm going to come back to something that Jack said, because I think one of the points that Jack made...
You've got 60 seconds to make it.
It's really good.
Go on.
Is that the whole Kante situation. I think that the Kante situation shows how lazy the analysis is here, because when Kante was playing at the bottom of the midfield for Conte and they weren't winning games, everybody said Conte was playing him in the wrong position and he needs to play box to box and Matic needs to play at the... Now they've reversed it, saying the complete opposite.
It's lazy analysis. Right.
But back to your point. Will they need to...
can they afford to sack him?
Chelsea are a ruthless club, you know? Mm. Like, look what happened to Antonio Conte in the summer.
Mm.
Like, they basically went through the whole season knowing they were going to get rid of him by January, but just left him there. Left it to the end of the transfer window, like 3 weeks left, and then got rid of him because they didn't want to pay him. Like, you know. So I think if Chelsea don't want to keep Sarri, they won't keep him. I mean, I don't think it's hard for them if they really want to go and get Lampard. Like, they could do that very easily. So I don't think they'll keep him just by default. And personally, I don't think Sarri would stay if they had a transfer ban.
Okay. Josh, Jack, thanks for your time on the pod this week. Do not forget to subscribe. If you haven't already, leave us a comment also in the iTunes section. We're across all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Until next week, peace.